If anyone has this book, Appreciating Navadvipa, there's a prayer here that is given by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who's Lord Chaitanya's eternal associate. And it's on page 32. So this is a wonderful prayer. It's 108 names of Lord Chaitanya. So if you have this book, you can chant sometime during the day this prayer. Then you can receive the benefit of having your pure desires fulfilled. Each and every one of your pure desires. Of course, generally, devotee only has one pure desire. We may have many impure desires. But our one pure desire is to serve Guru and Krishna without motivation, without interruption, and with all our life and heart and soul. That's our one desire. Of course, Lord Chaitanya would also play holy, because in the afternoon, this time of day is Madhyan Kala. So our acharyas have given us an understanding of the actual pastimes of Lord Chaitanya during the eight times of the day. So in the springtime in Braj, from the San Panchami until Purnima, this is the last day of a 40-day festival. 40 days of holy. And of course, 50 years ago in Braj, they used to celebrate holy for 2 weeks, 2 weeks to 3 weeks. They would celebrate holy. But now it becomes only 5 days, 6 days. On the 17th was Barsana, then the 18th was Nandagam, and then on the 19th was Ekadasi, they started in Vrindavan. We were in Barsana on the 17th. It was good holy. A lot of exchange of feelings and reminders of Radharani. And so Mahaprabhu also plays holy with his associates. They meet in Shiva Sangam in the afternoon, in springtime. And Surup Damodar starts singing bhajans, or maybe Vasudev Ghosh, beautiful holy bhajans, which you can also find written by Vasudev Ghosh and other padakartas. They're writing beautiful bhajans. So they would start singing, playing, they would sing the Sant Rag, the spring rag, and then they would sing about Radharani and the Sakas and Madhumangal, how they would dance and sing and play holy together. How the model Mangal way is captured by the gopis, and they would be covered with colors and full of pitchkaris, covered with so much liquid gulal. And then he would run back to the sakas and say, "Oh Krishna, we should leave from here right away. Look what they've done to me. They've captured me and tortured me with so many colors. And you don't believe, you won't believe how much ammunition they have. They have so many flower arrows and so many flower bombs." Because they would make these bombs out of lac. Lac is something, something from a tree, I believe. It's like the bark of a tree, it's part of a tree. And they would take this very thin bark of a tree, and then they would make a little ball. And inside the ball, they would fill it with chandan, sandalwood powder, and flower pollen, sandalwood powder, camphor, and kunkum, inside the ball. They make these balls like a softball or baseball. These were the flower bombs. And then these were so soft that if you breathed on them, the lac covering was so fragile that if you simply breathed on it, it would dissolve. They would take these balls and throw them in the face or throw them at someone. And it would just, this like feeling a flower was falling on your face, and then all this beautiful fragrant color. And fragrance, flower pollen, and sandalwood, and camphor, and all wonderful things would cover you. Now people throw maida or something, was it maida or something, white flour, rice powder, some chemical dyes, and they throw it in your eyes. They're not very nice. But then, so Madhumangal said, "Krishna, you don't believe how many flower bombs they have, how much gulal. They have thousands and thousands of pitchkaris, these syringes. And the gopi syringes, the pitchkaris, were 1 meter long. 1 meter long and 6 inches in diameter. About this big in diameter. So they could fill up about 4 liters. 4 liters of water. And mixed with gulal and roses and other flowers that would be soaking in the water. It was very fragrant and wonderful. And when they shot those pitchkaris, it would go about 10 meters. And they still have some of those pitchkaris. In Nandagaon and Barsana, when you go there, the Brahmins, they bring them out from the temple and they shoot everyone with a big, big size. And it just goes so far in the temple. So Mata Mangal said, we should get out from here because they have so much that we still have a chance to save our lives if we leave now. So then Krishna says, what are you doing? Be quiet. Whose side are you on anyway, Mata Mangal? You come here, you're dancing around and you're glorifying the enemy party. You're saying they have so much weapons, we don't have any weapons, we should leave. They have so many sucky soldiers, and they'll defeat us so easily. So this is the original holy, it was a very wonderful celebration. It went on for 40 days, all over Braj. So Mahaprabhu would sing bhajans about this, about Mata Mangal and the suckies playing music and dancing and squirting. And then Mahaprabhu, he would hear, and they would start dancing, and then he would enter his mood of Krishna in Vrindavan. And then Gadadhara Pandit, he would enter the mood of Radharani. And then some of the dasas would hand some powders to Gadadhara Pandit and to Mahaprabhu. And they would start putting powders on each other and throwing powders. So Mahaprabhu enacted this festival also, holy, Vasant holy. We call this Holy Purnima. This is Holy Purnima or Gaur Purnima. So here, and also, so that's Nitya Leela that's going on in the spiritual world. Lord Chaitanya is also playing holy in the Navadvipa in the spiritual world. And Radha and Krishna are playing holy. But at this time, because we want to hear about the pastimes of the Lord, we can hear the description of what the Lord is doing, what Lord Chaitanya is doing right now at this time, Madhyan Kal. There's a nice prayer that's given to us by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Madhyane sahate saparshara gane sankirtan yad idrisham sadve tendu gadadhar kila saha shri lavaduta prabhu. It says, arame mriduam marutesh shishiritar pringad vijernadite swam vrindavi pinam smaran brahmatiyas tam gora madhyayaham. He says, translation, Lord Gaurachandra continues to enjoy the performance of his morning pastimes of intensely enthusiastic chanting and dancing, surrounded by his own dear devotees, like Advaitacharya, Gadadhara Pandit, Avadhut Nityananda, and then afterwards they wander through the gardens and groves on the bank of the Ganges, where they enjoy sweet cooling breezes blowing over the river. Hearing the pleasant sounds of the birds and bees in those gardens, the Lord remembers his ecstatic pastimes as Radha and Krishna, which are occurring simultaneously in his own forest of Vrindavan. I meditate thus on the daily pastimes of Lord Gauranga. So that's a mantra that gives a brief explanation. And here's more detailed description of Madhyan Leela from 10:48 in the morning until 3:36 in the afternoon. Just as Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan spend their time at Radhakund at this time, so Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he also enacts his pastimes with his associates in the gardens, in the Nikunj of Navadvip. Lord Gaurachandra's flower garden is surrounded on all sides by tall kadamba trees, which are embraced by Madhavi and Malati vines. There are thorny bushes with big thorns, lying on the ground between these trees, which prevent the common people from entering. It becomes like a wall, a natural wall made of thorn trees. A pleasant south wind blows, carrying fragrant flower pollen. Jeweled pathways extend in four directions. The forest blooms with jasmine flowers, gardenias, red amarnath, malika, juti, roses, white lilies, yellow magnolias, and bakul flowers. Many enchanting jeweled altars stand under the trees, forming natural umbrellas above them. So underneath the trees, just like you go to Vrindavan, you see underneath the trees there's a cement platform, some small mandala, like a mandala, small platform. But then Nitya Vrindavan or Nitya Navadvip, the tree, underneath the trees, there's beautiful platforms made of jewels. And the trees are leaning over in such a way they become a natural umbrella or canopy. And this is also seen even in Vrindavan now. If you go to the ISKCON Dangati Palace, you'll see an incredible phenomenon. There was some trees growing there, growing straight in their natural pattern. So the devotee there, Gaur Narayan, he collected, he cleaned the area and found so many Govardhan Shilas when he was cleaning the gardens. Big Govardhan Shilas, because it's right next to Govardhan Hill, ISKCON Dangati. And he decided to put them under one tree. So he put them under this one tree on a platform. And what he noticed over the next few months is that tree, although the branches were growing in a certain way, all the branches on that tree started to come out on the same side where the shilas were. And the branches started to bend down and form a natural umbrella over the shilas. Very extraordinary. Very, very extraordinary. Because if the branches were growing like this, normal, branches like that, on one side towards the sun, because there was another tree next to it. So what happened is that the branches on the other side, which were above, I mean there were no branches, but where the Govardhan Shilas were, all these branches started to come out and lean down to cover over the Govardhan Shilas, just like we have a Shingasan, we have a roof, or what we call canopy, to protect the deities. So Govardhan Shilas are not different from Krishna, Giridhari. So that Kalpa Vriksha tree in Vrindavan is understanding, oh, Krishna has taken shelter under my tree, under me. I should provide some nice canopy for him, some nice covering. So the branches grew in a very unusual way. So this is something to see when you go there, to ask them to see that they're not only growing like this, but they're leaning over. They're specifically going down like this to make just like an umbrella. Yourself. So here's a witness. So in the same way, in Nitya Navadvip, the tree branches are growing down to form natural canopies over these jeweled basins or these jeweled platforms. There are banana groves and fruit-filled coconut trees and countless other trees defying the description, standing everywhere. All the fruit trees and flower trees are so full of fruits that their branches are bending down to touch the ground. Pomegranates are bursting and soaking the ground with their juice. Besides a lake in the center of that garden is a colorful golden temple. There are crystal slabs, steps which form the landing and the steps going down to that lake. And there are beautiful flower beds of Mallika and Champak surrounding the lake. This is the same as the description of Radhakund. So there's also a kund or a lake there in Navadvip. Full-blooming red, white, and blue lotuses gently sway amidst the lake's ripples being moved by a soft breeze. Greedy for honey, millions of bees, birds, and other birds playfully sport in all directions. Hundreds of aquatic species are moving unseen under the water. The golden complexion Lord Gauranga sits on a golden altar in the temple. He's trembling and crying tears of prema. Gaura's associates sit around him, and many pet deer come with expanded eyes upon seeing the beauty of Lord Gaurahari's face, and the peacocks respond by dancing jubilantly. In this particular forest, all the six seasons are serving the Lord one by one. Gaurasunda remembers Braj Leela. When the parrots start singing in the trees the parrots start singing, and they start singing about Radha and Krishna, and the pastimes that they perform at Radha Kund at the same time. And when Lord Gauranga hears those songs, he remembers Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. And then he says, then in the mood of Vrindavan, Lord Gauranga calls out, who has stolen my flute? Who has stolen my flute? Because in Radha Kund, in Krishna Lila, Radharani, when Krishna is sleeping, she steals Krishna's flute. That's why she's known as Vamshi Chodi. Or Bansiwari, and she steals, she gets the flute. She catches Krishna's flute and passes it on to other Vamsi Chodi. Thief steals the flute. So then, He says, "Who has stolen my flute?" And Gaura Sundaran says, "Just see, I have defeated you at dice," because sometimes they play this, it's like a type of dice, it's actually a board, it's called Pashakela. It's a board game that Radha and Krishna play at Shamakund. Nearby Shamakund, there's one place, Sudevi's Kund, where they play this. It's a, the dice, they have, the dice are actually marble, pieces of marble, they're long type, and they throw the dice. So we can see, what is forbidden in this realm, well, we can't gamble, there's no gambling, no intoxication, no stealing. But in Krishna's stealing, Krishna's gambling, Krishna's running here. We're not allowed to run around with any ladies. But Krishna's running around with so many gopis, around and around in the rasa dance. He's running, he's dancing. And we're not allowed to steal, we can't steal, we go to jail. Krishna's makanchur. He's glorified for his stealing. And we can't, there's no gambling, no intoxication, no gambling, no mental speculation or whatever. We say no gambling, that means no lottery, no playing cards, which is a very big pastime in India, especially among the Brahmins. The Brahmins, when Thakurji goes to sleep in the temple, then the Brahmins go out in front of the temple and play cards. For money also. You see in Gokul and Nandagam, they're playing cards. This is how they pass the slow days of winter. The slow days of winter, they spend playing cards and gambling their putting their donations up for the wager. So Lord Gaura Sundara, he's remembering, oh yes. So he tells, he says, "Just see, I defeated you at dice." Of course, Krishna never defeats Radharani at dice. She always defeats him. But he tries to cheat and stand up and say, "Look, I defeated you." But then there's, of course, a game board. There's a referee, a game board supervisor, Kundalata. There's an elderly Saki who's respected by Radha and Krishna and everyone. She says, no, you're lying, Krishna. She defeated you every time. So Mahaprabhu is remembering that. Then the next moment he says, "Oh, let's have Jalkeli. Let's sport in this kund." Then he says, "Come on, let's go perform Surya Puja." So then Gauranga begins walking, holding Gadadhar's hand. Thus Gaura Chandra plays with his devotees in the flower garden. They adorn Mahaprabhu with flower armlets, necklaces, and tie flowers of Gokul in his hair. Then the Lord sports in the cool shade under each and every tree. They dance, clap their hands in time, and make sweet music with mridangas and veenas. This forest is the same as Vrindavan in sweetness. But it is impossible to describe Gaura Sundara's limitless forest pastimes. Lord Gauranga takes a tour. He starts wandering through the forest of Nadia. Just as Radha and Krishna wander through the different parts of around Radhakund. Gadadhar reminds Gauranga that Sachimata is keeping many foodstuffs for him and anxiously waiting for him to return. Ornamented on either side by Nityananda Prabhu and Gadadhar, and followed by blissful devotees, Lord Gauranga returns on the footpath to Nadia and pleases all the townspeople with his enchanting beauty. Actually, that's Aparana Lila. That's 336. He's returning to his home, just as Krishna returns to Nandagaon with his cows and cowherd boys. So Lord Chaitanya returns to his home with all of his associates. Appearing like the trunks of elephants, Gauranga's long arms swing back and forth as he walks. Gaurahari's wavy locks are swinging like a swarm of bumblebees. They're so lovely, they mesmerize the entire universe. And his hair is tied with the shyness of all the young girls of Nadia. Fixing the flower arrows of his restless eyes upon the bow of his eyebrows, Lord Gaura Rai instantly pierced the hearts of the women folk by his mere glances. The smile of Gaura Chandra's moonlike face emanates rays of sweet ambrosia, amrit, which makes the chakora birds of the women's hearts greedily fly up to taste it. Gaurahari's powerful neck and waist conquer that of a lion. A very small waist. Pearl necklaces and jasmine garlands sway in his broad chest. Malayan sandalwood paste adorns his arms and limbs. These enrapturing features of Gaura Sundara are attractive to everyone in the whole universe. So, this is some description of what Lord Chaitanya is doing just at this time. Sometimes we want to hear just some of the leelas when Lord Chaitanya was a child. So we'll start off with this Balya Leela. Sachimata would teach Gaurasundara how to walk by holding him by the finger. Nimai would sometimes fall down as he tried to walk along, but then Sachimata would pick him up and place him on her lap and shower him with kisses. While lying in his mother's loving lap, Gaurachandra would move his beautiful legs and make his golden ankle bells chime sweetly. Sometimes Nimai would suck milk from his mother's full breast. Every morning, all the ladies of Nadia would come to Mother Shachi's house, and they would leave their own sons uncared for in their homes and run to see Gaurahari. They could not start their day without the darshan of the sweet lotus face of Gaurachandra. Every day they went, impulsively and spontaneously, to see Nimai. Somehow they managed to pass the nights in their own houses, but at daybreak they would collect many food items and rush to Nimai's house. They would come before Nimai and say, "Nimai, if you dance nicely, we will give you a reward with this kheer and rasgullas and sweet rice." So they would clap their hands, and he would dance for them, and then he would get all these nice sweets. Sachimata's heart would bloom with happiness as she gazed upon Nimai's moonlike face. The pastimes that Lord Chaitanya enjoyed in Jagannath Misra's house are just like the pastimes that Gopal Krishna enjoyed in the house of Yashoda. Nanda and Yashoda. He says Gopal Krishna here. It means Krishna when it's small. When no one was home, when his mother and father were not home, then Nimai would go into the kitchen and take the wheat and dal and rice and scatter it here and there and throw it all over the room. Then he would break the pots of milk and yogurt and throw oil, milk, whey and ghee all over the walls. Then when his brother, his elder brother Vishwarup, said, "Hey, Nimai, Mother Shachi's coming." Then Nimai would fall to the ground and start crying as if he was frightened by something. "Oh, oh, oh, Shachi, oh Mata, Mata, oh Janani." Then Sachimata, hearing her son crying, would run into the house. She'd say, "Hari, Hari," because this is the system in Indian culture, at least in old days, is that if there was any calamity or any difficulty, immediately people took shelter of Nam, Namashraya, because this is the only shelter. God is the only shelter, and he appears as his name. So people understand that. So therefore, when Lord Chaitanya appeared, and it was a lunar eclipse, everybody who's in the Ganges taking shelter of the name, Namashraya. Hari, Hari, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. In the same way, in a family situation, at least in the village, if any calamity or accident or something happened to their child, immediately the mother would invoke auspiciousness. She would invoke auspiciousness by chanting, "Hari, Hari." In the West, they do the same thing. The same phenomenon is there. What do they do in the West? When a mother, if the child is crying, as I've seen so many times, the mother will say, "Oh God!" She hears her son crying, "Oh God, what has happened to Johnny, my little baby or something?" She'll say, "Oh God." First, "Oh my God, oh my God, what happened?" And she'll run and pick up her baby and kiss him and all that kind of stuff. And, "Are you okay?" and touch him. So same thing that Mother Sachi was saying, "Oh my God." But God is a person. He has so many nice names, Krishna, Ram, Govinda, Gopal, Hari. But she said, "Hari, Hari! Hari, Hari!" And then she picked up her jewel-like son and held him lovingly against her breast. She became perplexed and bewildered. How is it possible that this little four-year-old child, Nimai, is causing such havoc and disaster in my house? Maybe a demon has come into my kitchen and caused all this damage. Because she went into the kitchen and saw the ghee and oil all over the walls and milk and yogurt and all the rice and wheat and dal scattered on the floor. And there's a little boy crying, frightened in a fearful way. So she's not thinking that, she didn't think Nimai did it. She thought that some demon came and did all this damage, and Nimai saw the demon and started crying and fell on the floor. She's very simple. Sachimata is very simple and very sweet. But she doesn't think badly, "Oh, my son has done it." She says, "Oh, someone else did it." We have the same mentality. We do something wrong, then we blame it on someone else. Different angle. But Mother Sachi's thinking, "Oh, my son can do no wrong. He can't do any wrong. It must be some demon has done this." So then there was the name, the Namkarana, the name-giving ceremony. of Nimai. So then, at that time, he was given the name Vishwambara because of his chart, his Lagna, whatever you call it, Janma Kundali. His chart indicated that he would maintain the whole universe, that he would nourish the whole universe, so he was given the name Vishwambara. So then, at that time, at the name-giving ceremony, as we've often seen in the temple, or with Srikala Gyan's son, we saw also, they put some coins on one side, coins, and then they put the Bhagavatam on the other side, and you see which way the kid goes. And you say, oh, he's a Vaniya, he's a Brahmin, he's a whatever. So I remember, I think Srikala Gyan, his son Yadavendra, I think he fell headfirst into the rupees. He fell headfirst, he was tottering like this, and then we were saying, Bhagavatam, because we were there. And he was going, and he fell headfirst right into the rupees. So we can understand that he'll be a big collector, a big life membership maker. But anyway, when Nimai funded, when all the gold coins were put on one side, so many gold coins, and on the other side was the Bhagavatam, he immediately, Nimai as a young, tiny little baby, he immediately picked up the Srimad Bhagavatam and embraced it to his chest. Nimai Pandit Ki Jai. Whoever saw Nimai's sweetly smiling face became drenched in a shower of bliss. As he grew up a little, he started wandering around the house. He was freely wandering in and out of the house, morning, noon, or night. No one could catch this restless boy. Whatever Nimai saw, he immediately wanted to taste it, whether it was sandesh, puffed rice, or bananas. It didn't matter. He wanted to taste everything. And then when people would walk by, even if they were total strangers, they would become charmed by his incredible beauty, and they would stop right in front of the house, and whatever they had in their hand, they would offer it immediately to Nimai. They may be carrying groceries or sweets from the market or going to their own homes. If they would see Nimai, they would stop and become completely captivated and enchanted by his overwhelming beauty. And they would just spontaneously go and take these things, and give everything to him. So he would stay out by the front gate most of the time. He would stand out by the front gate of his house and get so much bananas and sandesh. Just like sometimes in a family, you know, if you go to your uncle's house, you'll get good treatment. In the mother's house, they give hard time, but you go to the uncle, uncle gives money, he gives nice food, oh, eat whatever you want, no restriction. But when you go home, your mother says, no, you just ate, don't eat again, this and that. So Mahaprabhu, he's taking advantage. And sometimes he would go to the neighbor's houses for eating also. The story is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita about Haranya and Govardhan. Anikadasi, he wanted to eat something, so he went to their house and ate, because he couldn't get anything at his own house. So then, every day Nimai would enter his neighbor's house and steal something. He drank milk in one house, he ran into another house and ate rice, and if he couldn't find anything to eat, he would break the clay pots. If there was a baby in the house, Nimai would go up to the baby and pinch him and make him cry and then run away. Then if anyone saw him and caught him, say, hey, catch that thief! If they caught Nimai, Nimai would immediately grasp that person's feet. He would hold on to their feet. Oh, please, I'm sorry. I beg you, I promise I'll never do this again. Please, I promise, don't take me to my father. I promise you. And they would look at him he would look up with his beautiful lotus eyes and beautiful face, moonlight face, and they would say, okay, chalo, chalo. They would not take him for punishment. Appreciating Nimai's intelligence, everyone was amazed. No one would become angry, but everyone loved him more than they loved their own children. When he was 5 years old, now he's five, that was 0 to 5. When he was 5 years old, sometimes he would take one of his friends and he would hide his boyfriend somewhere. Then he would go to his friend's father and say that the boy was kidnapped. And then the whole family would go out and search all over the village trying to find their kidnapped son. And while they were gone, looking for this boy, Vishwambara would sneak into their houses and steal all kinds of sweets for his friends. So this was different ways that the boys would get sweets. So we said, look, we have to get some sweets and our mothers aren't giving us any. Why? Because Nimai is very intelligent. He was very smart. So I have an idea. We'll hide you somewhere I'll go tell your father that you were kidnapped, and then everybody will go search for you, then we'll break into your house and steal all the sweets and have a good time. Oh, splendid idea. But this is what they would do. This is when he was going to school studying Sanskrit. Vishwambhar dove into the nectar of restless and mischievous pastimes, which he relished with his Brahmana friends. Taking his band of friends, Vishwambhar would challenge all the other boys. He had his own group, and he would challenge the other Brahmanas because he was a student of Gangadas Pandit. So they had their own, they were like, just like in the temple, you have Lokanath Swami's disciples, and you have Gopal Krishna Maharaj's disciples, and they challenge each other, and they fight, and things like that. So, though of course, it hasn't come like this. This is, you'll hear how they fight. This is quite good. So in the Nadia, they had Gangadas Pandit's group, then you had the other Pandit's group. So many tolls were there, many Sanskrits. So Nimai Pandit, he had his own group. So sometimes they would fight with the other students in the other group. So here's what they would do. Words were slung. They would slung words at each other. They would curse words. They said, you don't know anything about Sanskrit. You don't know the first thing about Sanskrit roots or datus or this or that or anything. And then the other would say, yes, but you don't know anything about Nyaya. And they would start arguing back and forth. You're a fool. You can't argue with anyone. You can't convince anyone. You're completely illogical. All your presentations are always refuted. What kind of logician are you? So the Brahmins would fight each other back and forth with words. Now if that didn't work, then they would start throwing ink. So the boys were fighting, the different students were fighting with words, and they would start throwing ink on each other. So they have like a holy with each other, start throwing ink on each other. So we haven't gotten to that level. Then they would start wrestling and tussling with each other and roll on the ground. But the all-powerful Vishwambhar always won these quarrels. Covered with dust and ink, Lord Chaitanya looked very enchanting. So when Lord Chaitanya would come home, he would be covered with ink. Ink would be all over his golden face and all kinds of dust, and his mother would say, what happened? What happened to you? Oh, we got in a fight with some of the other pundits. We fought with the pundits. Of course, he always won. After finishing his studies at noon, the Lord would go to the Ganges and bathe. Kicking his feet, Vishwambhar would splash people on the shore and break their meditations. Because as explained in the throughout any yoga shastras, that the best place to do meditation is in front of deities, in front of your Thakurji, or in a mountain, on a mountaintop, or on the banks of a river. Because these places are charged with vibrations. From the bank of the Ganges, many yogis would go there and sit on the bank of the Ganges, as they do in Vrindavan and Yamuna and different places, and they do smaran or meditation. Very quiet. Yes, speak a little quiet. Shukadeva Goswami's father ran after him, all he could hear was the echo coming from the trees. He was calling out, "My son, my son," and it came back, "My son, my son." So it's so loud. Can you go somewhere? It's like, it's too much. So then he would kick his feet, and so people were meditating, and he would splash water on them. He would kick his feet and splash water on the yogis on the banks. And then sometimes Lord Chaitanya would go to them and spit on them. Can you imagine? Spit on, he's a Brahmin. He's a Brahmin, he's not a Shudra. And he would go to these people that were meditating, these yogis and different people who were meditating, and he would spit on them. So how fortunate that would be, because the spit of the Lord is called Adhara Amrita. Adhara Amrita. Nectar, the nectar from the lips. So this is what makes prasadam so special, is the spit of the Lord. So actually it's a great fortune. Can you imagine how fortunate that yogi must have been to be spit on by the Lord? Then one level, on a social level, a level of etiquette, you're thinking, oh, this is very bad. It was actually a great fortune. And he would spit on them, and then forcing them to repeatedly go bathe for purification. So he'd spit on them, then they would go bathe in the Ganges and get purified, then he would spit on them again, and then they'd go bathe again. Sometimes he stole someone's Shivalinga and ran off with it. Because the Shaivites would go down to the bank of the Ganges, and out of sand, just as the gopis did in Vrindavan, they would make the murti of Katyayani for their puja out of sand, and then they would worship, install her by murti pratishtha. They would invite her to enter that sand, and she would go there, and they would do their vrata there. So in the same way, the Shaivites were doing the same thing. They would make their deities of Shivalingas and worship with Ganges water, Ganga water, and
flower. And then Lord Chaitanya would grab that murti, and he would run off with it and jump in the Ganges. And all the Shaivites said, you little rascal. They would curse him. But no one could catch him. Sometimes people would be standing in the Ganges, chanting their Gayatri, and Vishwambhara would swim underwater and grab both their ankles and pull their feet, and they would fall over into the water. And he would make babies cry by throwing water in their ears. And after the brahmanas finished their afternoon purifying baths, he would take sand and throw it on them. Then at the same time, the village girls, they would also complain to Tachimata, because everyone would go and complain to Jagannath Mishra. All the men would complain to Jagannath Mishra, your son is a rascal. He's causing so much mischief. So then the ladies would go to Tachimata, the girls of the village, they say, oh, Mother Sachi, your Nimai is very bad. He is very bad. When we're bathing in the Ganges, he comes to the bank of the river and steals our clothes. And then he argues with us and insults us. And then if we try to return the insults, if we try to insult him in return, because that's what kids will do. They're not adults. If he's insulting them, so they say, oh yeah, well you're... So then when we try to insult him in return, he takes the water and just splashes us and covers us full of water. And then he forcibly steals our fruits and flowers for puja and throws them away. And then when we come out of the Ganges, out of the Ganga, he throws sand all over us. He and his friends, they throw sand all over us. And sometimes he sneaks up behind one girl and he suddenly shouts in her ear and frightens her to death. He sneaks up behind and yells in her ear and she becomes... And then another girl said, he spat on my face. He spat on my face. And another girl said, he put itchy okada seeds in my hair. And then another one said, he came up to me and asked me to marry him. Hearing these complaints, Mother Sachi smiled and embraced each girl and spoke sweetly. When Nimai comes home today, I will tie him up and beat him with a stick. Never again will he make trouble for others. Whoever was harassed by Nimai Pandit's naughty behavior felt intense spiritual happiness in his heart. So that's the difference between our naughty behavior and his naughty or bad behaviors. Everyone felt intense spiritual happiness.